Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the demanding voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I am. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning. I'm here. Good. At your request.
Absolutely. You were 2 minutes late, but I'm pleased that you're here because this may be the shortest podcast that we do, but I think it's important that we do a podcast today.
You do. We weren't going to do one, no. Were we? Just a few games, of course, Champions League and Europa League this evening, which we miss because we do the podcast on a Thursday morning. There were a few EFL games, but we thought, do you know what? There's not going to be enough to cover, so we'll just cover anything that does happen on Monday. But no, I got the call. Get over here now.
It's like the equivalent of the bat signal, isn't it? I put that up in the sky and here you are.
What would be your bat signal?
I don't know. Do we have like the Goalkeepers Union logo up in the sky? Could you imagine?
Just GKU emblazoned amongst the clouds.
That is the dream. We need to make that happen.
Yes, indeed. But Champions League is pretty much what you want to discuss. We're not even going to give out the contact details. We're just going to get straight into it.
Let's do it. But if you do want to get in touch, it is, just to show that I actually know, it's hello@goalkeepersunion.net. And you can get us on Twitter @goalkeepersunion or our phone number 079-723-717-87327.
Horrendous. @GKUnion, of course, on Twitter. And 075-03-673-020. Missed a couple of calls, actually, this morning. Had two calls.
What, on that phone?
Yeah. Okay. Don't know who they are.
That's a bit random. That's a bit worrying as well.
No message left, no.
Have you, so you see what I do is I always save it as, I don't know who this is. I'll save it as that. Then I look them up on WhatsApp because then normally you can see a profile picture and then you can gauge whether you want to call them back or not.
Okay, a bit creepy. Mm. All right, well, let's get on to the Champions League. Yeah. First and foremost, we'll start with Edison.
Well, that's pretty much the reason we're doing this entire pod, let's be honest. In fact, Edison and Mendy. And I watched both and couldn't help but feel that even though this might be the shortest pod in history, I mean, probably not going to make 10 minutes today, if I'm honest. But I'm happy to spend 10 minutes talking about these two individuals because I think both, it's fair to say, have been absolutely instrumental in each team reaching the final.
Yes, Edison with a quite remarkable almost assist. Mm. A key pass, I imagine that would be in the stats because he sent Alexander Zinchenko on his way for City's first goal. And Joe Hart was on the panel. He was there, wasn't he, in the studio. And at halftime, he said, by the way, this isn't normal. What he's doing here of one step, this isn't normal.
It's just the power. I mean, there's a lot that I wanted to talk about when it came to this. Firstly, look, we talk a lot about goalkeepers playing out, the good, the bad, the indifferent. But I think this, for me, when he's played it into the City midfielder, he's got the ball back, he's had that touch. And as you say, the ball is under his feet. So you're looking at it, when you get that sort of bird's eye view and you can see what's on, it was the fact that Zinchenko is looking for that pass. Now, the truth is, I think he's probably the only goalkeeper in the world that could have executed that pass because it is a good 70, 80 yards off one step. The amount of power and the execution is, and again, I guess there's probably not words I can say that are going to be that different from what everybody has said in regards to the actual execution of this. It is just phenomenal. It is superhuman. I don't know how he's managed to get that kind of distance on the strike. You know, I consider even when I had my best kicking day and had a 10-yard run-up and put absolutely everything into it, I'm still 10 yards short of where he's able to put this ball. And also the conditions. Let's not forget the conditions in the evening. It was horrendous. So for him to actually execute like this, but the bit that I love is that, and I'd liken it to NFL, and I'm sure this comparison has been done as well, but it is him as a quarterback, and you've got your wide receiver who has waited, and then all of a sudden has gone, and he's executed the Hail Mary perfectly. And it is that. It's a 50-yard pass into the end zone, which he's absolutely nailed. And of course, thereafter, City then have the overload and are able to, in the end, a little bit of luck, of course, to get the finish, but are able to score the goal. But I think it sets a bit of a blueprint for goalkeepers moving forward and the understanding and intelligence that goalkeepers have when you are playing short, why you're doing it and what you're looking to do. You know, it's all good and well playing to fullbacks, playing to sit midfielder. But of course, if you've then got the ability to break lines, to clip it over into fullbacks, into wingers, or as Edison does here, and this is effectively the ultimate, if you can go up over the back of the defence and change a game in one pass like that, then all of a sudden you will put yourself not only on the Premier League stage, but on the European stage.
And the pass before that is actually so important too, isn't it? You talk about breaking lines. It's pushing it into that deep lying midfielder who instantly gives it back to him. That is all part of the process.
Yeah, it's something that I didn't fully understand when I played. So when Uwe Rosler came in, prior to that, I'd always been quite direct from goal kicks. It was always just hitting areas, and that's what I grew up doing for 27, 28 years. It was just that. Then all of a sudden, Uwe Rosler came in, and he was adamant that he wanted me on goal kicks to try and play short where possible. And my question would always be, well, ordinarily I play it to them and they play it straight back to me, which surely that puts me in a worse position than the goal kicks. At least from a goal kick, you've got a dead ball and you can manipulate the ball that little bit better. Whereas if a ball's being passed back, it may be bobbling, you might have a striker closing you down, et cetera, et cetera. I was like, I'd rather just hit the goal kick and know that I'm hitting an area. But the point was that the moment you do play it to the fullback and they play it back, that changes the setup. All of a sudden, they are now moving on to you, and that creates spaces further up. So providing your next clearance goes where your initial clearance was going to go, realistically, even if they win the header, you're more likely to pick up the second ball. So it's all based on probability, all based on percentages. But again, it's just that understanding of the game. So sometimes the way that Edison plays, you're not necessarily fully understanding what he's trying to do, because it will just be bouncing it off the sitting midfield and maybe playing it to a fullback, getting it back. But then every now and then, and how many times have we seen it with Edison? He'll suddenly play that ball into the attacking midfielder, who will play it over the top to the winger like we saw here, or the one to Aguero, I think it was, against Huddersfield, that we've touched on a few times on this show. And I just think if you are a young goalkeeper and you're looking at how to distribute effectively, just watch clips of Edison, because he is doing it with a purpose. Sometimes you can't see it, but there's moments like that when you see exactly what he's doing. And when he executes it like that, you can take out an entire team.
There was one, I think, against Southampton either this season or last as well that's worth having a look at. I'm sure that's on Twitter somewhere. But the makeup of Edison here, how much of this is... Because you mentioned Hail Mary in NFL. It is similar to that, but Hail Mary, in a sense, is a kind of fling it up there and hope for the best. This is arrowed, directed, isn't it? So like a Hail Mary, but with actual direction, looking specifically for one person. How much of this is natural ability? How much of it is him working on his, I don't know, his quads to try and strengthen what he can do with the ball? And how much of it is also training week in, day in, day out to produce this kind of pass?
It's all that. It's all that, because it's quads, hamstrings, glutes. It's all that. There will be an amount of natural ability. You know, I'll always remember when I was at Watford, and I spent longer than anyone practicing on my kicking. I used to turn up early for about 7:30, 8 o'clock and do an hour's worth of kicking before everybody arrived. Like, I was so keen to be very, very good. And I think I probably maximised what I could do, which ultimately wasn't at the level of a Ben Foster, for instance, who came in, and I could just see that biomechanically he was a little bit different to me. You know, he had that little bit more raw strength, and I'd watch him approach a football, and the way in which he crunched that football, for the life of me, I just couldn't generate that power. So I think that biomechanics and, was it nature, nurture? I think that, you know, nature will play a part. There is going to be arguably a certain limitation to all of us. Now, some people might disagree with that, but I'm very much of that belief. And I think that with Edison, he has got a very, very powerful build when it comes to distributing a ball, but absolutely he's maximized it. You look at him as a specimen, he is incredibly muscular, but it's not just about the muscles, it's about the speed, it's the fast twitch fibers, it's maybe doing resistance work, I'm sure he does, or, you know, different bits of distribution that he might do in order to maximize what he does. So in that given moment, he is able to execute it. Then you've got the team on the whole. It's not then just him and Zinchenko. It's also the fact that you've got a player running back towards him and another one moving somewhere else. So this is effectively a set play. They all know what they're doing. They all know what's coming. They know that he's setting the trap, ready to take out the entire team by going over the top. So yeah, there's so much to it. But if you're going to look at it purely as how do you get yourself to that level? Now, look, you might not have the build to ever get to that level, but certainly I think whatever build you've got, you can get yourself to a very good level by working on certain areas of the body like we've touched on, but then also getting that strike. You know, we see a lot, certainly for the guys on social media. I know Modern GK is quite big on this, and we often see this stab technique that a lot do. I think it's then working on the technique that you're going to use when it comes to clipping, striking, working on the different trajectories, whether you're going to try and drill it into a striker's chest or go that little bit higher, a bit more of a lofted pass. You know, a lot of people will liken it to having every different club in the bag, you know, a bit of a golf analogy, but it's very true. Have you got the ability to drive it head height the whole way so that it gets there and they can bring it down their chest, which we see Ederson do unbelievably well, or suddenly getting a five iron out or whatever you want to say it was for Ederson the other night and just hammering it over the top. But yeah, look, it's a thing of beauty to watch. And certainly I think for young goalkeepers who want to maximise their game, I think it's fair to say that Ederson, when it comes to distribution, quite comfortably the best in the world in all areas.
Okay, well, that's Manchester City through to the final. They will be joined by Chelsea because Chelsea beat Real Madrid at Stamford Bridge. And thanks largely again to Edouard Mendy. A couple of very good saves from Karim Benzema.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm so pleased for him because he came in and there was all this positivity that was surrounding him initially. Then it felt like a few people had turned a little bit and weren't too sure, and Chelsea had been linked with whoever it was in the press. Now all of a sudden he's gone again and everybody absolutely loving him again. And yet for me, I'd say very little has changed. But what I would say, watching this, you can just see how pumped he is. Now, one of the big things, and it's a bit of a cliche, the whole big game players, you know, who produces in the big games. But there is something to it, because I think the mentality attached to playing in a huge game is something to look out for. You know, there are certain players that seem to thrive on the biggest stage. Now, if you're a mathematician, you might disagree with this because you might look at it very black and white in that, you know, sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't, and that you train all your life. And look, you could have a very good week's training and it just not go your way on the Saturday. But, you know, from experience, I know that in those big, big games, it can feel a little bit different. You are aware when the TV cameras are there, for instance, when, you know, if I was playing in the Championship, you're very aware when the TV cameras are there, for instance. Well, if you're playing on the biggest stage, semi-final, Champions League, such a tight game, you know, 1-1 obviously going into this game, you're very aware of the magnitude of the game. And for me, the fact that Mendy stepped up and looked so assured throughout, but also so explosive, I mean, that save to his left, the distance that he's reached, that's a goal all day. Moved it out of his feet and he's whipped it into the corner. That's a goal. It should be a goal. Now, for Mendy to save that, he's had to be firstly massively switched on to predict what's about to happen. I'm not having it that he's gone the moment that struck. He needs to have read that brilliantly in order to get just that split second to move the body weight to the left. And the way in which then he's then moved his body to spring to his left, full stretch, using his entire frame to get fingertips to it, it is an outstanding save. And I know I say this probably too often on this show, but I can't think of many other goalkeepers in the world that can make that save.
And they scored less than a minute after that as well, so even more crucial at the time. They did win 2-0, so Thibaut Courtois did concede twice. But still, a decent game from Courtois. In recent times, listen, we know that he's a top-class goalkeeper, but just in the past couple of seasons, we've seen his form return to what we saw when he was first at Chelsea in the tail end of his time at Atletico Madrid as well. He's a difficult goalkeeper to beat, isn't he?
He is. And I think, you know, something we saw, we talk about the Courtois spread, but it is, you know, it is interesting for me in that we talk about for young goalkeepers and that you practice certain techniques and ultimately you're going to be doing that similar technique over and over again in different situations. And I thought that Courtois, certainly when it comes to a one-on-one situation, incredibly tough to beat. He's so good at executing that spread, the timing of it, the way in which he approaches the player very quickly, uses his entire frame. I think it's very, very impressive. And you're right, no chance on the two goals. I think that's similar to when I talk about Mendy really being up for the big games. Courtois, in a slightly different way, certainly not as pumped as Mendy, but I'd say very, very assured in everything he does. And yeah, I thought he was excellent over the two legs. Certainly nothing he could have done. And in this game, I thought he was largely very impressive again, but of course on the losing team.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
So I thought we'd chuck this in before we just do a very small bit of reaction to the EFL games, because some goalkeeping quirks over the past week or so. There was actually some that we didn't see over the weekend because we did join in the social media blackout, so we weren't on Twitter at the weekend. But having caught up on some of the correspondence, and we'll finish on what we were saying about Edouard Mendy as well. There's one more bit to talk about him, because in the game between Chelsea and Fulham, this is quite remarkable and actually very, very funny. Bobby de Cordova-Reed was trying to remove Mendy's gloves at a corner. Yeah. And was persistent with it as well. Kept trying to undo the Velcro.
So annoying. So annoying. And look, I've never had that happen to me, but I'm sure every goalkeeper listening in, corners against, and you've got somebody on you, the various things they try to do, whether they're prodding you, whether they're stamping on your feet, just trying to find any way to get into your head. Just so, so annoying. And this is probably up there in terms of just being a pest.
It's funny, though.
It's funny.
Very funny.
Yeah, it is, but it's not. Like, I don't want to encourage this behavior. Do you know what I feel like? It's like a child. You don't want to encourage this behavior or say that it's funny, because then you'll get others doing it. And so we just want to nip this in the bud. No taking off of our gloves. We do not appreciate it. I don't know what we could do in return. I kind of feel like if they're going to start taking off our gloves, then what do we start doing? Like, bend down and undo their shoelaces? I don't know where we're going there.
I was going to say, you could. I don't know. Try and take the shorts down. Or wedgie. There you go. Give them a wedgie.
Taking the shorts down, that's even worse, I think. I mean, come on. This is going down a dreadful track now.
I remember being at a Southampton game years ago when Kevin Phillips was up front for Southampton and Jens Lehmann was in goal for Arsenal and he was stamping on his feet. Jens Lehmann, clearly someone who has a short temper anyway. Mm. And Lehmann nearly got sent off, but very clever from Kevin Phillips. And this, I mean, has that ever happened to you? Someone's tried to take your gloves off?
No one's ever tried to take my gloves. No, that's next level. That's next level in terms of being the ultimate pest. That's the word I'd use, pest. Mm. Yeah, really annoying. I could just imagine, cause especially when you have got your hands in a position ready for a corner to come in. So ordinarily you'd have maybe your arm out to protect you a little bit. You're ready, you're in your stance, ideally ready to come and attack the cross or to create a little bit of space in order to attack the cross. So if someone's then trying to take your Velcro, because especially if he succeeds and he actually manages to undo it, then you have this flapping little bit of Velcro that could put you off, you know, especially if you're coming for a ball and you can see the Velcro flapping in the wind as you're trying to come and catch the cross. There's a great chance you're going to take your eye off the ball. So yeah, really annoying.
Let's move on to Mark Travers. Here we go. Winner of the Hampshire Senior Cup for the third time in Bournemouth's history. 32 years since they last won it. They started this particular competition, get this, 596 days prior to the final. For this was the 2019-20 version, like we saw with Papa John's as well with the Hampshire Senior Cup. So this was effectively last season's final. It was Bournemouth against Eastleigh. It was 2-1. It was injury time. And up stepped Travers to nod home an equaliser.
He did indeed. And I felt his jubilation because I have also taken part in a similar cup, the Hart Senior Cup, in fact, with Watford back in the day. And we did win it as well. But I didn't score a crucial goal, unfortunately. But not only did he score the crucial goal, he was also a winner in the penalty shootout thereafter. But to talk about the goal itself, what a header. Out swinging corner, and the way in which he rose, bullet header from about 7 yards. Brilliant, brilliant header. Credit to him. We haven't heard his name for a little while, of course, since he went back from Swindon back to Bournemouth. But that is a way to finish the season.
Absolutely. It was similar in a way, wasn't it, to the header scored by Paul Robinson in the League Cup for Leeds. I can't remember who it was against. I want to say maybe Charlton, but I can't remember. That was quite similar in that Robinson scored a glancing header. What wasn't similar was the level of celebration. Robinson, as most goalkeepers do, went absolutely bonkers. Yeah. There was no crowd in this case, so maybe that was part of it. But Travers just put his arm up like Alan Shearer and executed a nigh-on perfect knee slide.
No, it was. It was good. It was a solid celebration. I almost wanted him to go a little bit more mental, especially given the size of the game. You know, to win such an illustrious cup, you would have thought that he would have gone absolutely bonkers. But it was very, very calm, very Shearer-esque, I would say. You're right with the single hand. The knee slide was very, very good. And then, of course, the team will come over and go crazy for him. It was almost as if he knew he'd score. It was kind of that. Because normally what happens is when a goalkeeper scores, they don't know what to do because, of course, you don't practice celebrating if you're a goalkeeper. You don't really know what to do. But it was almost like he knew he was going to score. And a very, very cool, calm celebration. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, fantastic stuff for Mark Travers. Saved two penalties throughout the game, really. Actually saved one shortly after half time, I think. But saved one in normal time and then saved one in the shootout as well. So very much the hero to you. Hopefully coming to a podcast near you very soon.
Yes.
Let's hope so. We're going to move on before we get to the EFL reaction to just one more moment. And you brought this up before we came on air because you said, I've got something you'll love today.
Yeah, I love this. Stoke have done a retro glove day. I think this is the brainchild of David Rouse, the goalkeeper coach. So each goalkeeper has to wear a pair of retro gloves. So that will be, of course, Joe Bursic and Adam Davis.
So they're wearing, they had to, but hang on a second, Joe Bursic.
So Joe Bursic is, yeah, so he's obviously been at Peterborough. He's now back at Stoke for the final game of the season. So yeah, they both had to turn up today wearing a pair of retro gloves. So in fact, if you go on Instagram, I think Joe Bursic has his gloves for all to see on his IG stories. He's gone for a classic pair of all sports, I believe.
Oh, he has, yeah. White, blue, and orange. A lovely shade of orange on those.
I'm still waiting for Adam Davis to send through what gloves he has gone for today. I was thinking if I could wear a pair of retro gloves. The thing is, retro for us probably isn't retro enough. That's what I would say, because mine would be the SMGs or the SRG Sondico. I mention them all the time. I know I do on this pod. You're probably sick of hearing it. But that would be the retro glove I'd choose, or the like, old school Roysch that Schmeichel wore. But as I say, they're not even that retro. I feel like we can go more retro than that.
Well, they look like brand spankers. What it seems like he's done is actually buy a new pair of gloves from a retro-ish brand, right? Or a retro style.
I actually know the story here. He was struggling and he called in a favour, and Matt Murray happened to have a pair from when he was in the youth team at Wolves, I think. So he just hadn't used them for some reason. So he sent them through in order to help save the day.
So just aside from this, this is Joe Bursic, who, as I understand it, was on loan at Peterborough United. They've got one game left. Yes, they've gone up. So what's the situation then? He's back at Stoke already.
Yeah, so the loan he went on was an emergency loan. So the rules, according to emergency loan, are providing the first choice goalkeeper is injured. Well, Christy Pym is, I believe, back fit now. So, of course, as soon as the first choice keeper's back fit, then any emergency loan returns.
I mean, this sounds... sounds a little bit fishy, no?
I mean, look, it's, I've got my thoughts on the loan system and the rules and regulations. So it doesn't work great for League One and League Two teams, and that what you often find is it makes more sense in some ways to only carry one goalkeeper if you're a League One or League Two team, because providing you haven't got another goalkeeper that's played, and it's five games. If they've got a second choice that's played five games, they have to play that second choice. If they've only got goalkeepers elsewhere in the squad that have played less than five professional league games, they're then eligible to do an emergency loan. And of course, in the Championship, you can't do it from the Premier League, you can do it from the Championship. Well, if you get a very good third choice, who Joe Bursic was for a small period of time, I know he's played at Doncaster and Stoke this season, but at that time he was a third choice, they agreed to do the loan. Great for Joe Bursic, great for Stoke City, great for Peterborough. You could argue not great for other teams in the league, and you could also argue not great for older goalkeepers, because there are fewer and fewer slots available now in League One and League Two, given that a lot are going down this strategy. The opposite is then true in the Premier League, because of course the Premier League, this is why you see so many strong number three, number four goalkeepers, because they realise that they can't use this emergency loan loophole. If they've got two injured goalkeepers, they need to play their third choice. And that's why I think you've seen the rise of these very well-paid third-choice goalkeepers. But certainly as you go down the leagues, you're seeing fewer and fewer professional goalkeepers. So for me, it's not quite right. I mean, it is what it is at the moment. I don't think it's necessarily going to change. But certainly, I think something needs to change, probably both ends, given that if you are, you know, a goalkeeper that is a bit older and a number two gig in League One, like I had, for instance, at Brentford for a period of time when they were in League One, that role just wouldn't be available anymore. And I just feel that you're going to see some top goalkeepers almost getting sucked out of the game just because there are so few slots available now.
Just to quickly labour on this, well, not quickly, but speaking, I mean, we said 10 minutes, we're nearly at half an hour there already. How does it work then legally? So you're saying in the Premier League, so they can't utilise an emergency loan in the Premier League, but you can in the EFL. So we see Premier League teams, like you say, hoard these goalkeepers. And in this case too, so it just sounds a bit convenient that Peterborough have had Joe Bursic on loan right up until they get promoted and then Christy Pym comes back in. It could well be that he is fit and he's ready to go again. But also for the ego of Christy Pym, who was the first choice, gets injured. We bring Joe Bursic back in. He gets us promoted. Okay, Christy, now you can come back in. How does it all work? It's
with that, fascinating. What will have to happen, it has to be signed off by a doctor. So for instance, with Christy Pym, he will have been injured until this point. And if the doctor now says he is officially fit, then he's now fit. So I do think it is just a coincidence more than anything. But I think that the wider picture for me is that League One, League Two teams, here's another situation, in that League One, League Two teams will loan a goalkeeper from the Premier League for a season, for instance, which they can do, of course. And the contributions might be very small. But it wouldn't surprise me if we soon get to a point where League One and League Two is almost seen as a breeding ground for young goalkeepers from the Championship or from the Premier League, which then ultimately will mean if you're not attached to a Premier League or a Championship club, then there might not be any professional goalkeepers signed to League One or League Two clubs. It might be that the next goalkeeper you see on a contract is in the National League or in the Conference South, Conference North. And it's going more and more that way because I think teams in League One, League Two realise that actually they can have a minimal budget, goalkeeping budget, by bringing in one of these loans. If that loan goes and gets injured, well, they'll just do another loan, an emergency loan from the Championship, and still get a goalkeeper of really high quality, a goalkeeper who may be on thousands and thousands of pounds a week, tens of thousands of pounds a week, potentially, who they're picking up for a contribution of a few hundred pounds a week. So I don't know, it doesn't quite feel right to me. It's not the same in other positions. It seems to be more the case in the goalkeeping department. And I just think the emergency loan rule, being as it is, just needs to be tweaked.
And finally, for one of the shortest podcasts that we were ever going to do, quick bit of reaction from the EFL. There were a few games. Firstly, the game involving Luton and Rotherham. Rotherham needed a result. It is going to go to the final day of the season. They drew 0-0 with Luton. But should they have lost? Jamal Blackman with Elijah Adebayo right at the death. It was from a corner. Sonny Bradley headed home, but the referee deemed Blackman was fouled by Adebayo.
It's a tough one, this one, for me, because I first look at it and I can see exactly why my guess is that everybody has said this isn't a foul, and it probably isn't. There's probably not enough contact, and it does happen all the time. At the same time, I've been there as a goalkeeper. Now, how frustrating it is when someone is blocking you off and they're doing it as aggressively as he was. You know, there's some that are very, very good at it. I think Kevin Nolan was always a good example of someone who could do it very cleverly without making it look like a foul, but made it near impossible for a goalkeeper to come out and claim a cross. In this case, it's somewhere in the middle for me. It's really, really tough, and I think he does make it very difficult for Jamal Blackman to get out of there. I think if he isn't there, Jamal Blackman does come for this cross. So in that respect, you could argue that it is a foul because there's enough contact for that to happen. But when you watch it, it does look like it's minimal. I'm genuinely sat on the fence. I know I don't normally sit on the fence, but on this one, I think it's a flip of a coin.
Yeah, normally sit on the fence.
Well,
really?
Sometimes.
But I would wholeheartedly disagree with you.
You're not having
this at all. Not in a million years.
Okay, but then at what point is it? Because for a goalkeeper on a corner, if you've got someone blocking you in, well, ultimately them blocking you in is a foul. Why are they blocking you in? That's obstruction.
But that's, I mean, that's...
Is that okay? Tell me in the rule
corners,
book where...
Since corners have
that's
ever
what I mean,
been corners.
But does that make it right?
But it's not in... So when you say tell me the rule book, for a player to stand his ground in the six-yard box at a corner...
Why is he standing his ground? To block the goalkeeper. So instantly, well, it's obstruction.
Well, no, because the goal... Like Blackman then did, actually pushes him away. You could argue, well, is that a foul? Blackman pushing him
the
away.
Obstruction
is
comes
that
first.
A foul?
It's not chicken and egg, because obstruction comes first.
I don't think that's obstruction.
I just think. Look, he stopped him from coming and catching the call. But this is what I'm saying. That's why I'm sat on the fence.
It's a grey area.
Yeah, I get it. And that's where, you know, I know there's so much focus on all these other areas with VAR and whatever else. That will be one that at some point will be addressed, because I think at the moment it is 50-50. It's exactly why I'm sat on the fence, because I can look at it and I can understand why you are adamant it's not a foul. But at the same time, I've stood there and I know how annoying it is when you can't get round them and ultimately all they're doing is trying to obstruct you. Do you know what? It's kind of similar, and I could have the same argument when someone like shepherds a ball out for a goal kick or for a corner or whatever, and you're looking, you're thinking, well, that's a foul. A lot of the time, it seems like it's so blatantly a foul that they're pushing them away to allow the ball to go out, but yet it's just a given thing now. It's just how it is. It's almost not questioned anymore. But I'm sure at some point, that will be addressed as well, because I think, is it right that the ball's running out of play very slowly and they're doing absolutely everything to shield the ball and guard the ball and obstruct them, pushing them out of the way quite often, but yet that's just okay now?
I just think any kind of clever, sometimes a bit nasty, sometimes a bit horrible to watch tactics are being removed from the game. We're going to be playing with partitions between us. You know, nothing to do with COVID, just the way that we're not allowed to touch each other, for crying out loud. I think that this kind of argument lends itself to the whole idea that football is becoming a non-contact sport, no?
No, look, I'm saying this, and I guess I am playing devil's advocate. That's what I'm doing. I'm playing that. What a game. That's what I'm doing. Because I get it. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that I necessarily want it to go that way, but I'm just saying that from what I understand, according to the rule book, neither situation's right necessarily. I think if a goalkeeper's getting blocked in, penned in, as a goalkeeper, I would be very frustrated if I felt that I'd been obstructed and someone's got a free header from 3 yards to head home. I would be running to the ref and saying, look, there's no way I can come and catch that ball because they're obstructing me. It should be a foul. Yet I've had that and I've seen it on the replay later on and everybody's saying it's a fair goal. So look, it kind of is what it is at this point. Blackman, by the way, in this one, the fact that this now takes it to the final day and now Rotherham, you feel, might just have that little bit of an advantage because I'm not sure if I can see Derby winning at the weekend, given the run they've been on, which obviously with that being the case, if they don't win and Rotherham do, Rotherham, of course, stay up. So it could be one of the biggest decisions of the season.
Yes. Another podcast again, I think, on this type of thing. Rules of the game that perhaps we don't know. And this is something we keep saying that we're going to get a pro goalkeeper on and ask him about the rules of goalkeeping and see if he or her actually knows all the rules. Because you talk about what is fair and what isn't fair. Is it fair for a goalkeeper to catch an easy ball into the box with a minute to go and then somehow happen to fall on the floor and waste about 10 seconds?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Similar. It's not. It's not right. There's so
accepted,
many things.
Right? It's accepted. It's just the way it is.
It does sound like it's going to be a fascinating podcast when we sit here and read out rule 3.1. You must not challenge a goalkeeper on a cross.
Okay, I don't mean it like that. I just mean the goalkeeper quirks, again, that type of thing that is sometimes quite interesting.
I gave that example. If you put a goal kick in your own net, it's not a goal, it's a corner. Things like that.
Yeah, things like that.
Yeah, better. Can't wait for that one.
On Rotherham, by the way, I know there has been a lot of shouts from their manager, Paul Warne, about how he feels like things have been against them. And I know that they have played 11 games in 33 days towards the end of the season. They've won just one of them. So regardless of the fact that it is going to the last day of the season and maybe they haven't had some decisions go for them, namely that goal against Barnsley, namely the sending off of Matt Crooks that we spoke about on a couple of podcasts previously, they've had a big decision go for them. So sometimes they level themselves out, don't they?
Maybe it was him saying that has somehow infiltrated the mind of the referee, which has played the part. There you go. Mind games.
Mind games. Very clever. Just two more before we finish. Ipswich, another goalless draw, right? That is 8 goalless draws in their last 20 games. 18 games in total this season where they've not scored. Only relegated Northampton have scored less at home. However, only champions Hull have conceded less at home. 17 goals conceded by Ipswich. That's level with Fleetwood. Hull have conceded only 14. So how do we look at this? A good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, not a particularly exciting thing. Mm. I guess if you're a fan, it's probably not what you want to see. But there you go. You really have finished the show with a bumper fact.
And one more fact. Chris Maxwell.
Yeah.
Clean sheet against Doncaster. Takes him up to 21, level with Josh Griffiths, level with Vaclav Hladký. Griffiths and Maxwell have played the same number of games. It's going to the wire.
It really is. Can you imagine if they rest one of them for the final game?
Oh, no.
Oh.
Can you imagine?
Oh, I mean, I'll be fuming. I want the shootout.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Very. I mean, everyone's been talking about it. Everybody I bump into at the moment keeps asking me my opinion. And the truth is, I just do not know which way it's going to go.
All will be revealed on Monday. Of course, the games are different as well, aren't they? They are League One on Sunday, League Two on Saturday.
That is correct.
I don't know why I've done it the other way around, but yeah.
But no, but it's just to make it quirky. So, so of course, this means that Josh Griffiths has a chance to put a marker in the sand. Mm-hmm. And if he gets it, I mean, if he doesn't get it, I don't know what's more exciting. I mean, let's just allow it to play out.
Let's allow it. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
You can take a rest because Simon Sluger is going to finish off the podcast, okay?
Excellent.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.